Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, for 100 years offering financial products and services specifically for the agricultural industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 17th day of May 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. And a bit later in the program, we'll discuss the weather forecast, that with Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Along the way, I'll update you on the agricultural news for the day. EPA seems to be getting in trouble more and more these days, and we'll hear from the state statisticians in Illinois, Indiana, and Iowa with an update on weekly crop conditions from their regions. And it all happens right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago today, futures finished higher. July contract in the corn pit at $3.97, up 3 cents. September, $3.99 3/4, 3 3/4 higher. December corn, $4.03 3/4, up 3 3/4. March at $4.11.5, that's up 3 1/4. Next year's May at $4.15.5, up 3 1/4. Soy complex red led the charge higher. July beans at $10.80 1/4, up 15 3/4. August, $10.82.5, up 15 3/4. And November beans, $10.67 1/4, up 12 1/4. January, $10.64.5, up 10 3/4. And bean oil, $32.78, a penny lower. Bean meal up $7.90 at $369.10. Wheat soft red up 7 cents at $4.81 3/4. And the July, that's the harvest month, the hard red July at $4.57 3/4, up 4 1/4 cents. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the June at $123.30, 27.5 cents higher. August at $119.75, up 27.5. And May feeder cattle up 92.5 cents at $149.57 1/2. August at $148.70, up 97.5 cents. Lean hogs for the day down 40 cents at $82.62 1/2. July at $83.32 1/2, 7 1/2 cents lower. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report of production of Illinois Public Media. Very quickly, I'll be out of the office Wednesday and Thursday for sure of this week, and probably for Friday as well. So we'll have some programming, but not our regular programming on each of those 3 days. And just wanted to let you know that I won't be around for those 3 days of the week. More from Illinois Public Media in a moment.
Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
Taking a look at some of the outside markets at this hour. Crude oil for the day at $48.36. That's up 64 cents. Ethanol at $1.59.5, 2 7/10 higher. The wholesale price of gasoline, that's the RBOB, at $1.63.5 is 2 9/10 higher. And heating oil at $1.46.7 is up 2 7/10 cents. Natural gas for the day at $2.05, 2 2/10 cents higher. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 17,477 is 188 points higher. The U.S. dollar down 0.15 at 94.535. The Dow, by the way, was down 186, not up 186. And gold futures for the day at $1,278.40, up $4.20. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area. Tonight, scattered showers before 8 p.m., mostly cloudy. A low this evening of 42 degrees on a north wind at 5 to 8. Chance of precipitation is 30%. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, a high near 66. Northeast winds at 8 miles an hour. Wednesday, clear, a low of 44. Northeast winds at 5 to 8. And Thursday, sunny skies and 69 on an east wind at 5 to 7. On Friday, a 40% chance of showers, mostly cloudy, a high near 69 degrees. Again, an east wind at 7 to 10. Saturday, partly sunny and 69 degrees. Mostly sunny on Sunday as we start the week, a high near 74. And on Monday, mostly sunny with a high near 78 degrees. More on those warmer temperatures at the bottom of this half hour.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Tuesday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana, is now on the line to take a look and talk about what's been happening in Chicago. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
I want to know what happened in the grain pit, especially for the soybeans.
Well, you know, we when we came in earlier this morning, we were down a little bit in corn, up just a little bit in beans, and when we reopened, we seemed to see some European buying coming into the meal. The meal pushed things up a little bit, and, you know, some technical buying from where we were. The dollar was a little weaker. But what we could finally uncover later in the day after many phone calls was it seems that a lot of people are still very concerned about the supplies in South America, what the quality is going to be in Argentina, where they were too wet, and will we continue to see some shortfalls in the beans from the dryness as far as in Brazil that way. So, you know, they said a lot of people thought they had 60% contracted down there, and it's turning into be 80% to 85%, and from this cutback and what they're doing. So, and the exporters and are feeling that because of that, we can see a good increase in our export program out of the U.S., and our basis levels are down, lowest levels in quite a few years for this time of year, and we are competitive to sell some beans. But they would like to see 3 million acres switched to get us to a comfortable level to feel that they could have plenty of beans to sell in that August, September, 1st October timeframe.
Am I right that they're not only looking to try to buy acreage from potentially corn, but maybe some of the hard red winter wheat acres that they'd like to have switched over at this late time in the game, although that might be a pretty difficult task?
Well, I'm thinking a lot of the wheat that was maybe damaged up in the north with that frost this last weekend, that would be a candidate for that. You know, some of the replants, you know, so we're looking at corn, we're looking at wheat acres, and you know, whatever we can take, wherever they can find some. And that was one of the reasons they're up that way. But there does seem to be the question mark. We heard that China, of course, was going to auction off some of their reserve stocks, and that always keeps getting shifted back. And the corn auctions are not going well. The quality of that corn is very poor, and we're hearing the DDG shipments actually picked up this last week because of that, because they're wanting to do that, and that doesn't count as grain imported on their blocking that in China. So we are seeing some DDG exports pick up again.
Is it okay to call this a demand-led rally in the soybeans now?
I guess we would say it is to a degree. It's figured what the demand is going to be farther down because of the shortfall of the South American crop.
And so it would be a supplier-led rally if you're in South America, but on this side of the equator, I guess we'd call it demand-led rally. Is there much of weather premium for the U.S. crop built into the soybean price?
Oh, I think there's some weather premium that's got built in the last month in both the corn and the beans, Todd. You know, when we looked at our balance sheets just a month ago, why we'd have never thought we'd see these prices. And because of the continued shortfall or increase of the shortfall in South America and the fund money coming on in and the building of the weather premium, you know, we've moved up quite a bit here.
So we've moved a long ways higher. That was something that most did not expect. I won't deal with old crop because I suppose people have shut the bin door and decided, man, I made some sales too early and I'm just going to hang this one out for a while and see what happens. However, on new crop, are there reasons that they might look at prices, whether it be for corn or soybeans?
Well, I mean, as we're looking at things, we've got prices now where we can figure a profit. We did not have those a month ago. It was maybe break even if we had tremendous yields and like that. So I think that, you know, some sales here, you know, and there's always the thought that, you know, maybe you want to buy that $11 bean call to go along with your sale here and say, hey, I'm willing to take it here, not buy a put below the market, then take the lower basis and everything, just plain sell it here at a profitable level and then put a call above it.
What else should we talk about for the day?
Well, I think, you know, it is very scary here in central Indiana. We're way behind on our planning. The rain looks like it's going to continue a while here, and it looks like it's going to be pushing us into at least the last week of May and first week of June before we get all our planning done in Indiana. Ohio and Michigan, and that also is adding a little bit of pressure to this market, pressure to the upside of this market, because we aren't getting good planting. A lot of places, and I think when we get crop rains starting in on the corn beans, they're going to be sort of poor too, because this corn crop that has emerged, it's got good stands, but I'll tell you, it's small and it's yellow.
They are lagging behind in Indiana and Ohio at this point. Will they catch up pretty quickly, I would assume, by the end of this week to beginning of next week?
Well, the end of this week might be a little rough, because we're looking at another rain shower again tonight. We're still a day away in a lot of places here. We actually have a couple of our insureds that have not planted 1 acre of corn or beans yet in certain areas where it's very wet. But, you know, if we can get dry by the middle of next week, a lot can go in a 10-day period.
Yeah, I made the note that Sherman Newland, who is in Hudsonville, Illinois, to the south of us and along the Indiana border, hasn't turned a wheel, I think, on his Twitter account. He wrote today, since April the 26th, has 90% of his crops yet to go in the ground. So, and Sherman moves pretty quick, so he won't be the only
one. He's not a lazy guy. He's a hard worker, and if he'd been able to be out there, he would have been. So that's what I'm talking about, is areas like that. You know, the individuals that I mentioned here basically are not, they're not guys that are the last ones done by any means in most cases, but you just don't farm in mud.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate you taking the time with us. We'll talk with you again next Tuesday.
Thanks, Todd.
That, of course, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He's out of Newmarket, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. If you'd like to listen to him again, you can always do that on our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There we post all of our agricultural programming not long after it airs on our radio stations, and you can listen to it on demand anytime you'd like. If you're an iTunes user, you can search for either the Closing Market Report or Commodity Week. They're a podcast in iTunes. It's in the brand new podcast section, too, I believe, at this point on your Android phones. So if you're looking at Google Play, you can do that as well. So check us out online anytime you'd like. In today's agricultural news, some agricultural groups in Washington, D.C. surely would like the ratification of the Trans-Pacific Partnership to take place this year, but that may not be happen, despite the fact it's worth billions in new ag sales and thousands of new jobs. It'll be a difficult task in an election year, says the American Farm Bureau Federation's executive director, Dale Moore.
I don't think there's anything simple about a trade agreement, because even within agriculture, you know, as we work through and talk to our members and as they ask questions, there are a lot of different numbers, and you kind of got to follow the bouncing ball around as to how this works, why this is a positive for agriculture. But when you get right down to it, because we anticipate there may be a chance during the lame duck session, that gives us from now until that time to educate the folks up on Capitol Hill.
Moore says AFBF is not about to sign up with those who are giving up trade deals without a fight.
Those folks who are telling you the simple arguments don't work are essentially making a political statement at this point that we're going to sit back, we're waiting to see how this plays out, and I don't think that it's the fact that those simple arguments aren't working. I think that there is this whole process, an election year process that includes a presidential race, and just the tension that is around this trade agreement.
And Moore says the TPP, that's the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and trade are easy targets for candidates on both sides of the political aisle. But the AFBF director vows he and his team will continue working to get policies in place. Well, speaking of policies, it appears the Environmental Protection Agency may have circumvented some of its own rules. The Inspector General of the Environmental Protection Agency, that's the EPA, is beginning an audit of controversial billboards in Washington State, which alleged water pollution was the result of agriculture. These were funded by a grant from the EPA and were part of the What's Upstream campaign by the Northwest Indian Fisheries Commission. An EPA official has already acknowledged that the billboards likely violated the agency's rules because they did not disclose EPA involvement. Agricultural groups have charged that the billboards amount to lobbying, which is a violation of federal law. The EPA has already been found guilty of one such anti-lobbying violation with its social media campaign promoting the Waters of the U.S. Rule, or WOTUS. Let's stay with this one agency, EPA. The House Committee on Science, Space, and Technology has launched an investigation into the Environmental Protection Agency's review of glyphosate. The committee joins the House Agriculture Committee, which is also pressing for an explanation from the EPA. The Science, Space, and Technology Committee is questioning why the agency pulled a report that said the chemical was likely not carcinogenic. The committee is questioning whether reasons other than science motivated the EPA to pull the report, as well as 13 other related documents, offline. EPA said the documents were published inadvertently and were preliminary, but documents were marked final, and a memo that was part of the report described it as the committee's final cancer assessment document. And finally today, on a similar note, another report finds the weed killer glyphosate is not likely to cause cancer. The latest findings come from a safety review by health, agriculture, and food experts from the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, along with the World Health Organization. The review concludes glyphosate is unlikely to pose a carcinogenic risk to humans who become exposed to glyphosate through food. The weed killer is commonly used on farm crops and in gardens. The review joins the latest in a list of similar findings following a conflicting review by the International Agency for Research on Cancer. The IARC claims glyphosate is a likely carcinogen to humans. A report by Reuters says the conflicting reports further complicate the argument between the IARC and the environmental regulators with the European Union and the United States. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture released its weekly crop progress report. It says that despite wet and cold conditions over the past week, farmers throughout the nation continued to plant corn. Combined, they put another 11% of the intended acreage in the ground, bringing the total to 75% planted. Even with the recent delays, corn planting remains ahead of schedule, 5 points in front of the rolling five-year average, which is 70% for corn. That's good, but the emergence rate is even better. It's 9 points ahead of average at 43%, though even that number is behind last year by 5%. It might be important to note at this later stage in the season that Indiana and Ohio farmers are about 15 to 20% behind on their corn seedings, roughly the same on soybeans. Nationwide, however, the overall pace of soybean planting is ahead of the five-year average at 36% complete, and right on schedule with emergence at 10%. Well, the winter wheat crop is ahead of schedule. 68% is headed. That's 12 points better than the five-year average. It remains in 62% good to excellent condition, just like last week, though the bottom end of the categories did increase 1 percentage point, with 7% of the crop now considered in poor condition rather than 6. Here are the I-State statisticians to tell you more about their regions.
This is Greg Tayson, Director of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service Iowa Field Office. Wet and cold conditions across much of Iowa slowed field work or even brought it to a standstill in some areas during the week ending May 15, 2016. Soil moisture levels increased during the week, with both topsoil and subsoil moisture levels rated 99% adequate to surplus. Similar to last week, the western third of Iowa reported the largest percentage of surplus and adequate subsoil moisture. 88% of the corn crop has been planted, 1 day behind last year, but 4 days ahead of the five-year average. Farmers in north central and central Iowa are close to completion, with 97% or more of the corn acreage planted. Statewide, 51% of the corn has emerged, 5 days ahead of the average. Meanwhile, 43% of the expected soybean acreage has been planted, 2 days ahead of the normal pace, with scattered reports of soybeans already emerged. Oat emergence reached 94%, 6 days ahead of the previous year and 9 days ahead of the normal pace. Hay condition rated 73% good to excellent, and pasture condition rated 71% good to excellent, benefiting from the added moisture during the week. Livestock conditions were reported as mostly normal, although feedlots were muddy. For the USDA NAS Iowa Field Office, this is Greg Tayson.
This is Mark Schleusener, State Statistician for Illinois, with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. Illinois had another wet week, which slowed planting progress across the state. Rainfall averaged more than 2 inches, which was more than 1 inch above normal. Southern areas received more than 3 inches of rain last week. Temperatures were nearly 3 degrees below normal, Growing degree days accumulated since May 1 are lagging behind the average. There was an average of only 1.1 days suitable for field work last week. Corn planting advanced 5 points and is now 83% complete, compared to 92% 1 year ago and 76% for the 5-year average. 64% of corn acreage has emerged compared to 66% last year and 45% normally. The condition of the crop was rated as 2% very poor, 4% poor, 26% fair, 55% good, and 13% excellent. Soybean planting is now 29% finished, behind last year's 43%, and also behind the 5-year average of 31%. 10% of soybean acres have emerged, compared to 8% normally at this time. For winter wheat, 80% of acres are now heading, ahead of last year's 60% and the 5-year average of 56%. The condition of the crop declined slightly from 1 week ago and is now rated 7% very poor to poor, 31% fair, and 62% good to excellent. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Illinois Field Office of the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Jessica Lemonager with the Great Lakes Regional Office of the National Agricultural Statistics Service. Planting progress continued to be behind schedule due to increased rainfall and below average temperatures. Recorded precipitation ranged from 0.66 to 3.67 inches, with a statewide average of 1.51 inches. Corn plantings have fallen farther behind last year and the 5-year average on account of the continual rains and cold temperatures. Emergence has slowed, yet much of the crop is in favorable condition. Weed pressure is beginning to show in corn fields. Corn planted was 45% complete, compared to 68% last year and 61% 5-year average. Regionally, corn planted was 49% in the north, 46% in central, and 33% in the south. Soybeans remain far behind last year due to delays with corn planting. Few soybeans have begun to emerge. Localized flooding occurred throughout the state, which has some concern about replanting for corn and soybeans. Soybeans were 15% planted this week, compared to 31% last year and 31% 5-year average. By region, soybeans planted was 18% complete in the north, 16% in central, and 7% in the south. Winter wheat jointing was at 93% this week, compared to 84% last year and 87% 5-year average. Winter wheat headed was 54% complete this week, compared to 32% last year and 38% 5-year average. Wheat continues to progress quickly despite the cold temperatures. Some spots of rust have been reported in wheat fields. That concludes this week's Indiana Crop and Weather Report for the week ending May 15th, 2016. This is Jessica Lemonager reporting.
Our thanks, of course, go to the state statisticians for their updates of the conditions in their regions. We collect them each and every Monday evening and post them to our website, usually Monday morning, at willag.org. And then here you'll listen to them on the closing market report on Tuesday afternoons. We update you, generally speaking, on the four top producing states in the nation, excluding Nebraska, which is the number three corn-producing state. Back in a couple minutes, we'll talk about the weather forecast, that with Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, and he'll take us through what looks like a wet end of the week and then a warm-up as we begin our week next week. Don Day, of course, is with Day Weather, and he's in Cheyenne, Wyoming. This is the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. Since 1916, Farm Credit Illinois has been helping farm families succeed, providing farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing. Farm Credit Illinois joins in celebrating the rich history of Illinois agriculture.
It's National Cherry Cobbler Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1733, England passed the Molasses Act, putting high tariffs on rum and molasses imported to the colonies from any place other than Britain and its possessions. In 1803, John Hawkins and Richard French patented a reaping machine. In 1886, John Deere died, an American inventor and manufacturer. He developed the first steel plow in the 1830s and founded John Deere and Company in 1868. As a blacksmith in a U.S. prairie town, he frequently repaired the wood and cast iron plows of eastern U.S. design because the local soils were heavy and sticky. By 1838, he had produced steel plows of his own design. Deere realized that a plow with a highly polished surface could clean or scour itself as it moved through the field. In 1848, John Deere moved his operation to Moline, Illinois, to lower his costs by taking advantage of better transportation and water power provided by the Mississippi River. Within a few years, production had reached 1,600 plows a year, and Deere was getting his own special steel rolled to his specifications from mills in Pittsburgh. In 1897, Alvin Stackman was born. An American plant pathologist and educator, he established methods for identifying and combating diseases of wheat and other food crops. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on a Tuesday afternoon. Don Day is here from Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Thanks for being with us, Don. Looking forward to having our discussion today.
Thank you for having me.
All right, let's start in the Midwest. Farmers, according to the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, are lagging a little bit, but not as far behind yet as you might have thought, given the amount of rainfall and the cool temperatures we've had. However, it's getting to the middle point of May. Is that in fact? And they really do need to move through the fields. Will they be able to do that in the next 2 weeks?
I think they will. In fact, I think things are going to get warmer and drier just in the nick of time for some folks. It's still going to be a pattern that's going to bring showers and thunderstorms at times, but we're going to see a big warm-up. It's going to commence this weekend and into the early portions of next week all across the Corn Belt and the Midwest. So the warmer temperatures will help things along, and while there is going to be the occasional threat for showers and thunderstorms, we don't see these big, slow-moving spring storms like we've seen lately. So the outlook for planting progress to pick up is looking good.
Warmer and drier is all well and good. However, given what we heard all winter long about the El Nino transition to La Nina, probably a bit more of a concern when you say those two words together. What do we know about that transition and the impact it may have over time?
First thing to remember about that transition is that there's always a lag. It is very hard to go from El Nino to La Nina and have the impacts of La Nina completely go away and El Nino start or vice versa. So with the El Nino weakening and our confidence high of us going into a La Nina, we are probably not going to be talking about the impacts of La Nina until this winter, late fall at the very earliest. So our summer will be dictated more so from the lag, the carryover of the El Nino, those warm waters in the Pacific this summer. So right at the moment, as we get into the summer growing season, I don't think La Nina is something that we're going to be seeing a big impact from. Next season is a different story.
Wait, so does that mean warm temperatures up front, but maybe rainfall through the month of June and July?
I think so. I think if we're going to have a problem with dryness and heat, it's going to be at the tail end of the growing season. And even then, we'll have to watch as we get into June to see if that's going to be a situation we're going to watch. Right now, I'm optimistic of adequate temperatures and precipitation this season.
And on the subject of temperatures, it did get chilly over the weekend, though I don't think there was much, if any, damage to the corn crop, maybe to the sugar beet crop in North Dakota and parts of Minnesota. Are we worried at all about any more cool air, or is that a done deal now?
I think it's a done deal. The trough that came in that brought that cold over the weekend is likely the last real cold one of the season. This May has tested a lot of people's patience in many areas of the country in terms of it not really getting warm and getting us into that early summer pattern we all want. But I think we're going to start to see that happen this weekend and beyond, where most of the nation from the Rockies eastward is going to warm up.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. What a great forecast. I love it.
Okay.
That's Don Day. He's with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, and joins us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.